This week's speaker is Mrs. Roberts. Mrs. Roberts is one of the campus ministers here at Pius. She grew up in Massachusetts and attended the University of Connecticut, where she majored in communications and public relations. After college, she joined Focus as a missionary and lived and worked in both Vermont and Colorado. She has been married to her husband Jordan for 3 years, and they have 2 children, Anna and Judah. They currently live in Wahoo. In her free time, Mrs. Roberts enjoys cooking, going on walks, getting iced coffee, and reading books to her children. Please help us welcome Mrs. Roberts.
Thanks, Josie, for introducing me, and I'm excited to be here. I do feel a little out of breath, and that's probably because I am a little nervous. And I just said to Mrs. Major, I was like, well, do you want to do this? She's like, no. We are doing our Lenten talks every Friday, and I just hope that today something that I say stands out to you. And oftentimes when I hear talks, I know that it's more important what Jesus is going to say to you more than what I'm going to say to you. And today I want to talk about authentic love. I want to talk about how authentic love heals broken love. And I just want to share my story. You know, the theme of this is our story with Jesus, our journey with Jesus. And we all have a story. All of us have a story, and that story matters. We all have a special way that Jesus has reached us. And maybe you're sitting here today and you're like, I hate these services, I want to go home, and I want to play Fortnite. And that's fine. You could want to do that. But I just hope that you can spend the next few minutes just being present to what I'm saying and know that Jesus wants to speak to you in a particular way. So I'm going to talk about authentic love and my story of how when I encountered authentic love, it healed broken love that I had experienced. But first I want to start with a quote, and it's a little small, so sorry if you're squinting. This is by Father Pedro Arrupe, but Father Winter told me yesterday that maybe this was poorly attributed to him, so maybe he didn't actually say this. But nonetheless, it says, nothing is more practical than finding God, than falling in love in a quite absolute and final way. What you are in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. It will decide what will get you out of bed in the morning, what you do with your evenings, how you spend your weekends, what you read, whom you know, what breaks your heart, and what amazes you with joy and gratitude. Fall in love, stay in love, and it will decide everything. And isn't that right? The things that we love, we follow after. The things that we put our heart into, we follow after, right? And maybe that's a sport or a person or a relationship or just getting this next degree or getting into this college. These things that we love, they're good. But you've heard it a million times, St. Augustine saying, our hearts are restless until we believe that God belongs there first, that God's love is the thing that's going to affect all parts of our lives. My first love was the ocean. This is me and my dad. I lived just about 30 minutes outside of the ocean. I lived outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and I was an East Coast girl. We went to the water a lot. Here's me in third grade with my big poofy hair. Love it. Needed a straightener. But I loved it. I loved being in the water. I loved going on the bumper boats when we went to Delaware every summer. My family vacationed to Bethany Beach, Delaware. Anyone ever been to Delaware? Does anyone even know where that is? Nick Phelan, thank you. That's awesome. And the water just made me feel so small and like little. That feeling of being next to the ocean and just the ocean being so big and me being so small. I grew up in an Italian Catholic family. My mom is from the Bronx and my dad is from Pittsburgh. And we grew up just like any Italian Catholic family in the Midwest, you know. Lots of big food, rosary, Lenten services, all the things. But on the East Coast, and I don't know if any of you have traveled there, it's very different than the Midwest. The Midwest, just the culture is very immersed in faith, and it's conservative. The East Coast is very different. So I was raised in a Catholic family, but honestly, that didn't mean a lot to me. We went to Catholic school. Oh, there's my sister. Just me and my sister and my parents. She works for Spotify. She's a lot cooler than I am. Anyway, but it was just the three of us, the two of us and my parents, four of us. Here I am in my gym uniform. I went to Immaculate Conception Catholic School, and I loved Catholic school. I loved it. I only went till eighth grade, but I feel like those moments, those early moments of being in Catholic school, going to Mass, I just remember everyone singing and feeling this, like, peace come over me. I just remember loving being there. But after Catholic school, you know, when I was there, I felt that I had this anxiety that was continuing to rise. I was kind of an awkward kid. I developed early, loved my M&M suit. and I just felt this anxiety. And, you know, oftentimes we hear the quote, I don't know if you've heard this, that's not transformed is transmitted. The things in our lives that are not transformed, we often transmit to somebody else. When I think about my childhood, I think about my parents, and my parents were super wonderful. They were awesome, and I knew that they loved me. But they were preoccupied with their own things. My dad worked long hours. I remember him coming home at 8 or 9 o'clock. He traveled oftentimes to Europe for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and I just remember not having a lot of experiences of sitting down with him and him asking me how I was or really getting to know me on a deep level. And my mom had her own story. She was divorced before my dad, and she just had never really dealt with those wounds, and she was very anxious and preoccupied in her own things. And so we didn't spend a lot of time as a family talking about God or talking about faith. We did a lot of things, and we went through all the motions as Catholics, but I didn't have a strong relationship with Jesus. And so when I got into high school, I went to a public high school. I was a cheerleader for 4 years. I was tennis captain. I got coach's award. I got all straight A's. And on the outside, it looked like, yeah, Tori has it all. She's happy. She has a lot of friends. But love in my life was broken. The love that I had experienced and the love that I was seeking was not of God. Because of things with my family and some of the dysfunction there, I was just seeking to be affirmed and to be loved. I wanted to be loved a lot, and I was prom queen. No one would ever know, but the relationships I had, particularly with men, were so toxic. I think back on that time and just the desire to be seen. I started drinking when I was 14, and alcohol was an easy fix for feeling and filling the insecurities that I had. Alcohol and drugs and promiscuity, all these things just, it was easy for me to go to because they filled up something that I was lacking, and I didn't have God to turn to. I was very popular, but very empty. I graduated with honors, and I loved graduation day. I just remember thinking, this is my time to get away and to continue partying and living in this way that I was. I chose to go to the University of Connecticut, UConn. I was there the year the boys and the girls won the national championship, so it was super exciting. I just remember feeling this freedom there. I could do whatever I wanted to, and my parents weren't making me go to Mass. But again, I just think back, and I think, gosh, those relationships I had were so shallow. They weren't based on anything deep. I mean, we had a lot of fun together, but a lot of it was based on use. And I don't know where you are right now in your relationships. Maybe you have awesome, amazing friends that you can talk to Jesus about, and praise God. Praise God, we all need friends that we can talk to, that we can be vulnerable with. But some of you I know have friends or people in your lives that you know this is a relationship where we're just using each other. It's late at night, and I just send that text. I send a snap, and I'm just like, hey, to a girl that I have no intention of dating. Or a girl, you know, she flirts with you in the hall, or she sees you out, and you guys flirt a little, but she knows, I'm not going to date you. These are relationships of use, and I found myself caught up in all of it. But what happens with sin is that sin catches up to us, and over time, I became very dark and depressed. And I remember so many nights going home to my dorm room and just sitting there and thinking, something has to be more. There has to be more because everything I'm doing, you know, I was seeking to be a public relations manager in New York City, and I wanted to go, and my dream was to drink apple martinis and hang out every day with my friends. And I just know that Jesus was asking me to say more, to do more. There I am. I look sad in that picture. So what happened? What happened is that the beginning of my junior year of college, I stumbled upon the church at UConn, and I had only gone a few times before. And I stumbled upon the church, and I met this girl. She played Division I soccer at UConn, and she met me after church, and she just kind of ran into me, and she was like, "Hey, Tori, I've seen you a few times, and I would love to get coffee with you." And so we got coffee, and I met up with her, and she invited me to this retreat, and she was like, "I really think you should go. I think you would really like it." And I was like, "Thank you so much, like, for the invitation, but I'm not that Catholic. Like, that's just not me. I'm not that girl. I'm not about that life." And I kind of just blew her off. I was like, "I don't want to go." And persistently, week after week, she would send me texts. "I'm thinking of you. Can you reconsider?" And eventually, just to get her off my back, I was like, "Sure, sign me up. Sign me up." And I found myself in a snowy January weekend at the back of the bus with all these joyful kids laughing and giggling, and I had my UConn blanket over my head with my earphones in. I was definitely grumpy girl. And I didn't want to be there because I didn't know anyone, and I thought it was weird. But the second night of the retreat, we had adoration. And I had never gone to adoration once in my life. We didn't grow up going, and we didn't go in Catholic school. So I was 21 years old, and that was the first time I saw Jesus in the Eucharist. And he sat before me, and I can't explain what happened to you that night, but maybe this has happened to you, where the peace and the joy comes over you that you can't deny that that's God before you. You can't deny it. And only God can break through in that sort of way. And I knew that night I wanted more. I didn't know what it was going to look like, and I was very afraid, but I knew that I wanted more in life. So after that, I got back from the retreat, and I wanted to be in a Bible study. I wanted to do things faith-related, but I had lived so many years in sin and in toxic relationships, so it was hard to commit with 2 feet in. It wasn't until my senior year that I met one of my now best friends. Her name was Shannon, and coincidentally, I was in Connecticut, and she was a missionary. She was from Nebraska, and guys, I used to think she was drunk when I saw her. She was so happy. Like, she had so much energy, she was just joyful. It was like, something is wrong with this girl. But she knew God. But God to her wasn't like a weird person that we read in books or we hear in theology class. She knew him personally, and she sought after me in friendship in a way that I had never experienced in my life. We would meet up, we would go on these long drives around UConn's campus, and I would just like pour out my life. This boy who had cheated on me. This night I got drunk and I did something I really didn't want to. And she would just listen, and she was never scandalized. She was never like, "That's too much, no Catholic for you." She was just patient. And her love and her steadiness, it changed my heart. It changed my life. Her friendship of authentic love made me want to follow after Jesus. And I didn't know how to pray. And oftentimes, you know, we've been doing all these spiritual one-on-ones. Maybe you've had yours, probably just if you're a senior or junior. And we hear a lot of kids say at Pius, "I want to grow in my faith, but I don't know how. I want to know Jesus personally, but I don't know how." And guys, what Shannon did for me is she would walk me into the chapel. We would sit in front of the tabernacle, and she would say, "Just tell him. Just tell him what you're feeling, like your fears, your dreams, how your day was. He's right here. Picture him in your favorite place," which was, for me, the beach. And day after day, I would just go and try to do that. And over time, the friendship was formed. And we have to know him if we're going to change our lives. Nothing's going to matter. You know, we're not going to want to listen to the rules of school or stop gossiping or stop cheating on our tests if we don't know that Jesus cares when we do those things. She would tell me, "Every time that you fall in mortal sin, Jesus is crying. He's crying." And that affected me so deeply. I remember just so many nights going out and partying and finding myself at 1 or 2 a.m. in front of the tabernacle, just wanting to be next to him. I wanted to be around friends who talked about God. And maybe you're this person where you're like, my friends just don't talk about God. I don't know who my friends would be. And maybe the people that I do talk about God are nothing like me. That's what these girls were. They didn't care about fashion. They didn't care about boys. They just cared about deeper things. And I was so drawn to those conversations. And I know some of you, this has happened in your life where you've had an encounter with Jesus and you just don't want to be around sin in the same way. I've heard particularly women say this to me this year. I don't want to be around people that gossip. I don't want to be around people in the lunch table that talk about weird stuff and sexual things. I just don't want to. And that's because your heart has really experienced Jesus' love and you just don't want to be around it. And that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with you. After college, I became a missionary, just like Shannon was for me. I worked for Focus. And I knew that there was nothing else I could do with my time after college than to become a missionary and to love people the way that Shannon had loved me. I moved to Vermont, and I met the next most influential person in my life, Father John Schnobrick. He was my chaplain in Vermont, and he was my boss. And his love was so pure. But at first, I was really freaked out by him because he was a man. And I hadn't had a single good encounter with a man up until that point. But I'm not sure if you've encountered somebody, maybe it's been a priest or a nun, where when they talk to you, they look in your eyes so deeply, it's almost like they can see into you. They see into you and you're like, whoa, don't look at me. That's what this man did for me. He would look at me with like such purity and he would assure me, Jesus is going to heal you. I don't want to take anything from you. I don't want to use you. I just want to love you. And guys, that radically changed my experience of God, because my image of God was so broken because of all the broken relationships I had found myself in. After that, I moved to Colorado, and I became an international missionary with Focus. And the next 9 years, I lived my, like, missionary life. I went to India. I went to the Great Wall of China. I went to Spain, and I walked 300 miles through the country, walking the Camino of St. James. It was clearly difficult. Yikes. And then I found myself, my last international trip, I went to Israel on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. And at this point, I was 30 years old. I had no boyfriend. I hadn't dated in like 4 years. And I had just started to believe, like, maybe I'm just going to be single. I don't know. Maybe God just wants me to be single, and that's fine. But I was really, really sad because I had lost a lot of hope in God's plan for my life. I didn't know my husband, and I didn't believe that maybe God even wanted it anymore. Maybe I'd just done too many bad things for him to desire what I desire. But God wants what we want. And maybe you're sitting here now, and there's something on your heart that you really want. But you've prayed and you've prayed and you've prayed and it's just not happening. God doesn't want us to go on a mystery hunt. He doesn't want us to open our Bible and point to a certain passage and then he'll tell you the answer. He wants what we want because he wants us to be happy. But I had to be patient and I had to have hope. And on that trip, I actually got a tattoo of an anchor on my ankle, which represented hope. And I felt like God asked me to have hope that God would provide the man that I was supposed to marry. And a month later, I met Jordan, right after that trip. And Jordan's from Wyoming. He's a small town boy. He played college football. He worked in the NFL. And he had a very similar story to me. He came from brokenness. His parents are divorced. But his love, he had an encounter in college. His love broke through any other past relationship and identity lies I had around men. Jordan's patient. He's understanding. He's not freaked out by my emotional ups and downs, the parts of my heart that are still wounded. He loves me and he sees me. He prays with me. He prayed over me this morning in the kitchen before this talk. He put his hand on my shoulder and he just prayed a blessing over me. And I never thought I would encounter a man like that in my life. On our wedding day, I remember standing before him in the church in Massachusetts and saying our wedding vows and getting to the vow of, I'll be faithful to you. I had cheated on every boyfriend that I had had before Jordan. So saying, I'm going to be faithful to you forever. I just remember tears coming down my eyes. Because I knew in the moment I wanted to give my whole self to him, the way Jesus had given everything to me. We stood with our friends and family, and it was a great and amazing day. And my friends prayed over me. I thought this was weird. I thought only charismatic Christian people did this. But on my wedding day, my friends laid hands on me, and they just prayed for me. And they wanted what I wanted. They wanted me to be happy. But they had journeyed in my story all these years to come to this point. My matron of honor was Shannon, that girl that I met in UConn. She was my matron of honor, my best friend. And Father John was the priest that set our wedding. Full circle moments. I never thought that love could be this great. But I had to allow Jesus into my heart in order to get to this place. And it wasn't perfect. Fast forward, we had Anna Grace, who's now 2. And then a year later had Judah Joseph. And I'll tell you, I mean, there's a lot of parents in this room. Nothing like parenthood to get you out of yourself and show you all the ways that you're selfish and that you need to grow. But motherhood has shown me that love continues, and love is so much more than a feeling. Love is a choice every day. Say, I'm going to get up and love these people that are throwing bananas in my kitchen. Stop doing that. But I'm going to do it because I love them, and my feelings matter sometimes. And it's great to feel in love with somebody. You have a boyfriend, I love them. What if they drive you insane? You're just going to break up with them? You're not going to choose to love them. You have to make a choice with our brains. So these are my raccoons. They live with me. They're amazing. They make a lot of messes. But I just want to spend the last moments here just sharing quickly, I know I'm probably over time, quickly about Anna Grace. And in June of 2022, we found out that Anna had had a pediatric stroke. We didn't know this at the time, but around 6 months, we saw that she wasn't developing like other babies. She wasn't crawling or using her hands. So we took her into Boys Town and found out that she had had a massive stroke on her right side, so her right arm and her right leg. And it was motor verbal. So emotionally, if you meet her, she's here, I think. She left quickly because she saw I was speaking and not to her. And she's amazing. You would never know that there was any developmental delay with her. She's working on walking, and she's so courageous. And this girl loves Jesus. And I feel like her faith in Jesus has inspired Jordan and I in so many more ways than we ever expected. But love comes with a cost. Love always comes with a cost, and love is always risky. And loving her, not knowing what's going to happen, being so afraid, like, will she be like other children? Will she walk one day? I think she believes so. This is her Mary doll that she sleeps with every night. And she holds in her hand, someone gave it to her, this oil of St. Raphael. It's healing oil. And every night recently, she just started doing this. She sleeps with it in her hand by her cheek. And I think that girl knows, like, Jesus is going to heal her one day. And it's amazing just to see what God has done. So these are my invitations to you, and I'll wrap up now. How are you letting Jesus love you this Lent? Maybe you're super pissed off with him. That's fine. Maybe you're in love with him already. That's awesome. But all of us can go deeper in our faith. All of us here. It's not when we get into college, then we do it. Or after we get married, then we'll do it. The time is now. Everything matters in our hearts. Go to the chapel today. And if you don't know how to pray, Jesus, reveal yourself to me. I want to experience you. And who in your life shows you authentic love? Who in your life shows you authentic love, and who can you turn to say, I can give you my heart and trust that what I tell you, you're not going to tell anybody else. I can entrust my secrets to you. We all need friends like that. And that's not just for students, that's also for staff and faculty. Pray if you don't have somebody, adults in the room, somebody that really knows you, that you can call after a long day, not your spouse. You can call and say, this is what happened. I'm struggling right now. Because the students in this room are looking at you to be lights of faith. And they're looking to you as someone who's going to be like Jesus. But you can't give what you don't have. You can't give what you don't have, and you can't pour from an empty cup. So you have to be received into by friendships in life. Good friendships. I love you all. I think you're all amazing. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.